Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Take a look ahead to this series against the Toronto Blue Jays as the Mariners road trip continues. Daniel Kramer, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com, joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Daniel, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, well, we're excited to look ahead after what was, I'm going to just admit, a very surprising series win over the Mets. I mean, if you're taking a quick look back, what was the key for them in that one?
I think just coming through yesterday, you know, they had six hits, a lot of production from the lower half of the lineup. Cal Raleigh with the big homer, Abraham Toro chipping in, and then obviously Julio Rodriguez coming through with a career-high four hits. It just seemed like for a slugging offense or a struggling offense that they were really able to string some timely hits together at a time when they really needed it. They kind of bullied Carlos Carrasco there and got into the Mets bullpen early, which I think was really key. Obviously, they had a scare late in that game when second rider came in and had one out and, you know, left with the game-winning run potentially on second base. But credit to Diego Castillo for coming in and, you know, throwing 13 sliders to shut them down with Starling Marte and then Pete Alonso, obviously, on the check swing. It was a really tense afternoon in Queens. But a really exciting one, too, and obviously a huge series win for a team that really needed it, especially after dropping, you know, 12 of 15 going into that road trip. It's a juggernaut of a road trip against a really good Mets team, and I know the Blue Jays have been scuffling lately, too, but, you know, it's a pretty lethal offense themselves as well. So, you know, the challenge doesn't stop after going to New York. They're going to pick back right up here in Toronto, and, you know, I expect another really tight series.
Daniel, what does it say to you that you have a team like this that you mentioned that has been scuffling, but that ultimately has been able to, you know, take on a challenge like the New York Mets fans in that environment and to really, really take it on and embrace it and, you know, not just win games, but also have some showmanship out there? What does that say to you?
Yeah, I think obviously if you were watching this weekend, the two guys that really stood out were one, Paul Sewald, who has a chip on his shoulder going back there because he felt like the team, at least from a front office perspective, kind of gave up on him. And then two, Jesse Winker, who's just a fun guy and has had this little rivalry going with them and really relishes it. So when he goes back there, he embraces it. He wants that attention. He wants that irate treatment from fans. And, you know, it was exciting. It was fun. And for a guy like Winker, maybe it's something that can really get going because he's quietly put together a seven-game hitting streak now where his OPS is up to 854. And, you know, I think it's for him in particular, especially with how he was hitting going into this road trip over the first 6 weeks of the season or what have you, you know, he'd really been struggling. And they acquired him to be a run producer, right? And they really needed him to be a big part of their offense. And, you know, he kind of came through. I know they didn't get the win on Saturday night, but that was a big three-run homer. Then obviously he had a multi-hit game yesterday. So, but to get back to your question, you know, with Sewald Winker, you know, big weekend for them, and I think maybe it's something that they can help steer them in the right direction.
Hey, Daniel, are you calling us from, or did we call you? Are you in Toronto?
Yes, I am in the bowels of Rogers Center, just outside of the clubhouse. Right,
okay,
now.
I was going to ask where you are to describe everything you're seeing, because we're having listeners right now trying to guess what the background noise is. They're very confused. Daniel, my favorite so far.
Sorry.
No, you're good. But my favorite so far is that Daniel is in a warehouse full of ghosts. Is the best guess. someone else said maybe calling from a zoo.
Know. I don't know if it's full of ghosts. I was trying to get to a point where I wasn't in anybody's way and where it might be quiet. Clearly, I've not accomplished that.
No. It's like we're all there. We're all at Rogers Center right now. It's like you took us with you. Hey, I wanted to talk a bit about, again, kind of continuing conversation about some of these pitching matchups. Scott Service, obviously, post-game after that finale against the Mets, but just from the series, said that obviously starting pitching being so great is a huge part of that. You have to, you don't have to dip into your bullpen as early. They're shorter reliever this time around. Would you say that's one of the biggest keys to this series against Toronto is just getting the most out of your starters?
Yeah, and continuing to hit. I mean, yeah. The rotation has been mostly solid all season, except for over the past week or two. You saw a couple skids. But, you know, with Chris Flexen going on the hill tonight, he's had a little bit of struggle with, you know, velocity and command and really getting that cutter, changeup, curveball mix going for him. And at times, you know, it looks like there's a lot of buzz on that fastball, and then he kind of loses it and leads a couple pitches over the heart of the plate. And then all of a sudden you're looking at a four spot in the inning. And with the way the offense has been hitting, it's kind of been hard to dig themselves out of that hole. So, you know, going up against a former Mariner tonight in Yusei Kikuchi. Yeah. It should be an intriguing matchup to see how Flexen can kind of navigate this tough Blue Jays lineup, see if he can pitch deeper into the game. They will be without Drew Steckenrider, but they were able to recall Roenis Elias to take that roster spot, so they will have a fresh arm out of the bullpen. And then you got Marco Gonzalez and Logan Gilbert going for the rest of the series, and you know, those guys have looked really solid lately, especially with Marco on Friday in Queens. He was going toe-to-toe with Max Scherzer. You know, a big part of where they, if they are going to get to where they want to go, which is, you know, deep into the summer and remaining in postseason contention, you know, he's a big part of it. He might fly a little bit more under the radar stuff-wise compared to, obviously, Logan Gilbert, Robbie Ray, George Kirby. You know, but the consistency of him being able to go out and give you six, potentially seven innings a night, limiting the damage, even though it's not flashy as stuff, that's a huge part of what they're trying to accomplish.
You know, Daniel, I have to say that I have just been so incredibly impressed with Julio Rodriguez. How can you not be at this point with what he's been able to do and the adjustments that he has been able to make? What about what he has done so far has been most impressive to you up to this point?
I think it's, Jake, man, it's his level-headedness, you know? Like, I think back to when I was 21 years old, and I was in college, and I didn't even know, you know, like what I was doing. And here he is in the major leagues and, you know, able to really, especially with all those called strikeouts he was dealing with a couple weeks ago, and to kind of just keep his approach, stay within the strike zone. He has such a good strike zone awareness. I don't think that gets talked about enough because he's just so toolsy from his speed, power, bat speed guy, and just his ability to just not chase has been really impressive. And I was talking to him a little bit before the game yesterday, you know, because he had a few tough games in New York before the big breakout, and he's just so cool, calm, and collected. He's like, yeah, these pitchers up here are really tough, but it's all about learning and adjusting, and he continues to have fun. And I think that's really important because those first few weeks were really tough, but if you look at the sample size continuing to grow since then, the numbers have been really good, and it obviously was punctuated yesterday with reaching base five times, four hits, a huge homer. Homer left his bat at 114 miles an hour. I mean, I think I tweeted this out. There have only been like six Mariners since StatCast began tracking who have recorded a homer that hard. And I think we all knew that he had that bat speed, but we haven't necessarily seen the tangible power results yet.
Right.
And that was one thing I asked him before the game yesterday. I felt like, hey man, is that the next thing that's gonna come? Are you gonna start like seeing the ball clear the fence? And he's like, definitely, you watch. You know, because he's a confident, charismatic guy.
So, right.
I think continuing to watch, you know, the solid approach at the plate. I mean, the homers are so much fun, obviously, but you know, his ability to stay within the strike zone, not get out of it, even though he was getting some terrible calls, and you know, just trusting his own judgment has been really impressive, and you know, how he's been able to handle it all.
Yeah, there's no question. I think that you perfectly outlined that in terms of what Julio's been able to do in a short period of time. And, you know, going on the other part of you know, someone who has really struggled and trying to find their way out of it is Jesse Winker. And you know, you had tweeted out, you know, his performance and his seven-game hitting streak that he currently is on right now. How big is it for this team if he can really get his bat going, get the confidence going, and be the player that they were anticipating him being from the Reds?
I mean, Scott Servais said it after he hit the three-run homer after the game. You know, for us to get to where we want to go, we need Jesse Winker to be a run producer. You know, not an on-base guy. You know, not a guy who's going to draw a ton of walks. I mean, that's obvious. That's all good and well, and to have a good disciplined approach. But they need him to be driving and runs. You know, and you saw it when the season started. He was hitting in the heart of the order, 3-4-5. I think he's back up to 4 or 5 today, but he kind of dropped down lower in the order as he was having his struggles. And you know, when he was getting on base, it was via a single, it was via a walk. You know, he had the one homer, I think, all year until Saturday's big three-run bomb. And so, you know, for them to get to where they want to go, they need him to be consistently driving in runs. And so to see what he's doing right now has been encouraging. You're starting to see a little bit more slug. You're starting to see him get into those fastballs that are right over the heart of the plate. And I think that was, you know, kind of what his issue was over the first few weeks of the season, was he was getting those pitches right in the heart of the plate, but he was either fouling him off or getting under him or getting on top of him and not really squaring him up. So, you know, I think once you start to see that happen, things are going to really progress for him.
Hey, Daniel, I know that your answer is subject to change because we're seeing all kinds of roster information and news come out, but Adam Frazier is not in the lineup today. To the best of your knowledge right now in this moment, is he with the team in Toronto?
I am not in the clubhouse right now, so yeah. I'm not quite sure. I didn't poke around to see if he has a locker, but if my understanding is that they're going to make that release that they did, and I would anticipate that that's the only announcement that would be coming, but I'd have to get back in there to give you a definitive answer on
No worries. We'll keep an eye out. Maybe an off day, but it's just a series where you never really know, so I was curious as to whether they'd have him, but just wanted to check in on that. Hey, I wanted to quickly ask just about the division in general. Astros back on top, which everyone kind of expected. A team I didn't expect to be as good, obviously the Angels. Are you buying that they've turned it around this year?
I think I will be if I start to see like regular, consistent starting pitching, deep into the season. And if you start to see that happen, you know, which we won't until we get into July, August, and September, then I think, yeah, you're talking about a legitimate chance for sure. And they do have the two best players in the game. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any debate about that Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani are the class of the field. But they've struggled to have consistent starting pitching year in and year out. And some of it's, you know, been bad luck, whether it's injuries. You know, obviously they had a very tragic situation a couple years ago with Tyler Skaggs. And so they've struggled to have consistency from their rotation. And if you start to see that happen, then, yeah, there might be some legitimacy. Speaking of good starting pitching, the Astros have been on a really good roll. They seem to just find either unearth a career resurgence from Justin Verlander after Tommy John surgery, or, you know, guys like Framber Valdez and Luis Garcia developing them through their pipeline. So they're not going anywhere for sure. Yeah. But I'm really curious to see how the Mariners will match up against the Angels, because they haven't yet played them. And so that's something definitely worth watching for.
Yeah, Astros.
Trying to pull it up here. I think they don't play the Angels till June. They don't play them for another month.
So. Wow.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're going to see the Astros.
You know, it's intriguing. It's intriguing because they have really good teams, you know, like really good players, rather. Like Ohtani and Trout are phenomenal. So if they could put it all together, yeah, look out for sure.
They're always, I totally agree with you. They're one of those teams where you look at it and you go, you have the two best players. I can never rule you out because of that. It's always going to be a nightmare to face you. But then you've also completely, you know, bombed and missed the playoffs. They're such a weird team to predict. But I agree with you. The Astros on a roll, winning 9 of 10, or excuse me, 9 of 10. Angels cooling off a little, but yeah, I'm going to have my eye on that series. He is Daniel Kramer of MLB.com, covers the Mariners. Daniel, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, of course. Appreciate it. Sorry about the noise.
No.
All good,
Daniel. We appreciated you taking us there with you. It was immersive. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.
Wish I could bring all y'all to Canada. Thank y'all.
We do too. Bye. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Pendergast Law. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jair Alexander has become the top paid corner in the league with an $84 million extension. So what's the trend football fans need to adjust to seeing?
Well, Jair Alexander obviously becoming the highest paid corner. These contracts are getting crazy, right? In terms of premium position, cornerbacks, receivers. I mean, we're talking about DK Metcalf being around $25 million plus. The edge rushers are, you know, around $30 million plus. So typically what you've seen is the quarterbacks being these big mega contracts and everyone else, yeah, having good deals relative to their size, but not, you know, really putting a major hamper on how you put together your salary cap, right? Where now you're looking at these premium positions and cornerback, pass rusher, wide receiver. These are positions, left tackle now, that you're looking at and going, man, how do we fit this all together? How do we keep these guys? Well, when these premium positions matter as much as they do, and the NFL, you know, revenue continues to grow, continues to expand, you're going to have to adjust your eyeballs to what is the norm of a salary like the cornerback position. It is ballooned so much in, you know, the last 5 years that it's almost kind of hard to keep up, hard to realize that, man, these are the types of contracts that are being signed. And I think that for football fans, they're having to readjust their eyes, readjust their expectations as to what these non-premium quarterback positions really are valued in this league. And it just continues to be a shock each time a new corner gets signed, each time a new pass rusher gets signed, each time a new receiver gets signed, and I don't think that trend is going to go anywhere.
I'm going to add a very quick update. We asked Daniel Kramer of MLB.com, who joined us for just a couple minutes ago. Adam Frazier is not leading off. He's not in the lineup today. Given the travel restrictions on unvaccinated players, we didn't know whether he was with the team. There certainly hadn't been a roster move. It looks like it could just be an off day. At the time, Daniel wasn't in the clubhouse yet, so didn't know. But Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com says, well, here's the splits for Toro versus Frazier as leadoff against left-handers. Toro, as a switch hitter, has just been performing better. So it could just be off day for Frazier. Going with Toro as the switch hitter against a left-handed pitcher with Yusei Kikuchi. So just something to keep in mind there. Good stuff from Brandon. Second down. Jake, is Drew Brees really contemplating a return to the NFL?
No. Look, Drew Brees put out a tweet and said, look, I know there's a lot of speculation about my future right now as an NBC analyst. And then he went off and rattled a bunch of things in terms of what he could decide to do with his future. He rattled off potentially working for NBC, potentially coming back and playing football, potentially focusing on business and philanthropy, focusing on a pickleball tour, senior golf tour, and obviously just coaching his kids. Like, the point being is, like, look, no one knows my future except for me. And when I decide what that's going to look like, I will let you know. I believe Drew Brees is just out there being very, very frustrated at the fact that someone may have gotten inside information about Drew Brees' future at NBC and what he's decided to do, rather than Drew Brees being able to announce it himself. We saw this earlier this offseason with somebody like Tom Brady, who it was leaked out there by Adam Schefter that he was going to retire. And then it was also leaked that he was going to unretire. Mm-hmm. And Tom Brady being frustrated about both of those reports being leaked. So I think in today's day and age, it's really hard to keep things airtight, sealed, and not have anybody find out what's going on. But look, for Drew Brees, I would be bummed if he walked away from the NBC gig. I thought that he did a good job in year one and would only continue to grow. But, you know, there's so many other things that he can do with his you know, post-football career. And I say post because I do not believe Drew Brees is going to come back and play football. I'm very confident in saying so. I know he put that out in a tweet, and I know a lot of people ran away with it, but I don't think he has any intentions of returning to the NFL.
Third down. The Seahawks will be entering phase three of OTAs very soon, so who needs this time more than any other Seahawk?
To me, it's not even close. Drew Lock is the guy that needs this OTA period more than anybody else. It's not only to come in and learn a new system and to immerse himself in the Pete Carroll environment and, you know, immerse himself in the positive environment that he has not experienced during his time in Denver. what he also needs to show over, you know, the course of phase three, which is actually getting out there and competing against, you know, the defense. Right now, they've, you know, gone through and thrown routes. They've, you know, been through, you know, two rounds of install. They're going to go on a third. They've thrown with the receivers routes on air and have ran through plays routes on air. Now it's time to go up and compete against the defense over the next week is when they're going to start that. It is time for Drew Locke to now put everything that he's learned in this new playbook into practice and to show this coaching staff that not only does he have the talent, but that he can be trustworthy. He can take care of the ball. He can make the right reads and process at a high level. That he can be, he can realize the talent that they believe he has. And the reason why, you know, they brought him in was because they thought that he could legitimately be their starting quarterback week one and are really hoping that he can live up to that billing. So I don't think that there's anybody that can make a bigger impression other than Drew Locke during this period. Doesn't mean that he's going to win or lose the quarterback battle here in the spring. But he certainly has the most to gain, I believe, over the next, you know, over the next month.
Fourth down. Earlier in the show, I had a gaffe where I asked George Kirby about him and his brother. It turns out he has sisters and doesn't have a brother.
Mm-hmm.
I contend that not only was George Kirby lying via photographic evidence now found on Twitter, but that he just should have rolled with the lie. Help me out. Help your girl out.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Jake, for your fourth down, what is a lie you told that you had to maintain? You had to work to maintain the lie.
I'm not proud of this at all, but there was a lot on the line, okay? I was in college, and there was, you know, in college as a student athlete, you have random class checkers, okay? So it's not every single day, but you know, you'll have, you know, the football program, they will have people or the academic staff, they'll send, you know, random class checkers to make sure the student athletes are in class, going to class. And if you're not there and they catch you not going to class, then they're going to report that to the football team. They're going to report that to your strength coach. And you are going to the very next day have, you are going to have, you know, 5 a.m. lift. And it's not just like a typical
punishment.
Lift. It is a punishment where they are trying to make you throw up. They are trying to make you regret not going to class and to never do that again. So
you were late to class.
I was late to class. The class checker came. They notified my coaches, and I got that text saying, hey, why weren't you there at class? And I said that I got into a car accident.
Let's backtrack. Why were you really late?
Why was I really late?
Why were you actually late?
I maybe had slept in.
Okay, so you did not give yourself enough time to get ready.
Correct.
Okay.
That is exactly right.
You're a little lazy, a little tired.
Yeah, I mean, being a typical college student.
Sure. You were up late studying.
Yeah, totally. And I had to perpetuate that.
Got it.
And the story had to evolve and continue to evolve.
Did you have to add a story about what happened in the accident?
Yeah.
What did you say happened?
I can't remember, but, okay. You know, I'm sure it was something good, something believable, because they bought it, and I didn't have to go to 5 a.m. lift. So I'm not proud of it.
Yeah.
But
well, now they know.
I mean, desperate times call for desperate measures, I guess. I was not wanting to do I wanted nothing to do with that 5 a.m. lift.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But the problem with telling a lie you have to maintain is if you make the mistake of giving too many details, you need to remember the details because mm-hmm. sometimes other people will.
Correct.
So the best thing to do is someone sideswipe me. I was at a red light and someone sideswiped me going by me.
Yeah, but then you have to be like, oh, were you able to fix your car? You know,
then you just say, no, I'm going to leave it. Because that's the thing. You tie it to something that's real. That's the trick. Everyone who needs advice on lying and being a horrible person.
This is terrible advice. We should not be promoting this.
You should. Tie it to something that already exists so that you have some kind of evidence or something that you could, that's like kind of the truth.
Uh-huh.
And then you just embellish. You just add decoration to the truth is what you do. You're adding decoration to it.
I like this better. The 253. Jake crashing his car on purpose. Maybe that's what I should have done. I should have just dinged up my car.
So desperate to not go to work that you just smash it.
Hey, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to tell a lie. You just got to do it. I never even got to the lineup. We're up against the clock. So I'll give you that lineup and we'll take a look ahead a little bit. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, three quick stories to get through here as we kind of start to wrap up our day. I'm going to start with the lineup. I mentioned that, so let me actually get to it. You got Abraham Toro at second, leading off, not Adam Frazier. I was wondering, given the travel restrictions on unvaccinated players, whether Frazier was one of those players. It hadn't been announced by the team. However, Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com pointing out that Toro has just performed a bit better against left-handed starters, whereas Frazier has struggled compared to left-handed starters. Interesting to note, Frazier has done better against left-handed relievers than left-handed starters. Very weird, but that from Brandon Gustafson. So could be going into that decision that switch hitter Toro gets the start at leadoff, and then Frazier getting a day off. All right, so Toro, leadoff, then you got France, Crawford, Rodriguez, Winker, Suarez, Torrens, DH, Souza, and then Moore, Flexen, obviously, your starter against Yusei Kikuchi.
Well, that certainly makes me feel a little bit more comfortable in terms of, you know, the pitching matchup as to why Frazier would not be there. Just, you know, from a competitive standpoint is what I'm talking about, because you want, obviously, Adam Frazier to be there for the rest of the series, or know that you could go to him in a pitch hint situation if you need to in this game. So we'll see how that works out for the Mariners, and it's going to be weird going up against Yusei Kikuchi, a former Mariner, and obviously started the season last year on fire. And as, you know, Spider Tack and things like that, you know, were disbanded, you get in the second half of the season, Yusei starting to deal with injuries, and just wasn't the same guy, was not the same guy for the Mariners in the second half of the season. So obviously there will be a little revenge game aspect of it for Yusei, and we'll see if he can handle his emotions. And hopefully the Mariners are able to put a lot of base runners in motion and put pressure on Kikuchi. So we'll see what happens here. But one thing that I am pleasantly happy with over the last couple games is the fact that Jesse Winker has gotten going a little bit, and I would love to see that continue, because obviously, as we talked with Daniel Kramer on at 1 o'clock, and if you missed that, download the Jake and Stacey podcast wherever you get your podcasts. He talked about how, you know, Winker is the guy that they need to be driving in runs. This Mariner organization, Jerry Dipoto, is relying on Jesse Winker to be that type of guy for this organization. And if he can do that, if he can deliver on it like he did in this last series, then it gives this team it gives this team the best chance to win.
All right, next up here, a look ahead to the NBA Conference Finals. The Bucks and the Suns were eliminated in a pair of Game 7s this past weekend, an especially embarrassing showing for the Suns in Game 7 against the Mavs, just absolutely dominated Phoenix. So the Mavs move past the Suns for a series against Golden State. That series will begin Wednesday for the Western Conference Finals. Miami will take on the Celtics for the beginning of the Eastern Conference Finals. That one going to be tomorrow. So no games today. Eastern Conference Finals begins tomorrow, and then Wednesday we'll kick off the West.
So when you're talking about these conference finals, remember when we were talking about in Hype Train about, you know, whether it was the Suns or the Heat, and we were talking about,
and I was not wrong for saying it would be the Suns' year. Why would I be wrong about the most dominant team in the regular season losing by so much?
Because it's the playoffs. It's the playoffs, Stacey, but it's the Miami Heat that were the ones that were able to advance going up against the Boston Celtics, and the Dallas Mavericks going up against the Golden State Warriors, like we all predicted. So I honestly do not know who's going to win. Obviously the favorite is going to be Golden State on the in the Western Conference. But you know, Dallas, as they showed, they can be deep if they have their secondary players outside of Luka scoring. They can be a problem. They can sneak up on anybody. And this was a team that went 52-30. So this is not a team that just barely, you know, just dragged into the playoffs and are, you know, surprising people. This is a very good basketball team. So then you go on the flip side and you got Boston and Miami. I mean, we'll see. We'll see if Jimmy Butler can really truly carry the Miami Heat in this matchup. This is when the NBA actually gets fun, when you start to see the level of competition really start to take off and take shape. It's brutal to watch during the regular season, but the NBA playoffs, especially at this point, it's always fun to tune in.
You know
in.
A team that wasn't brutal to watch during the regular season?
What's that?
The Suns.
Oh.
Again, I digress.
Regular season Warriors. You're taking this loss really hard.
Well, because I made a prediction, and I am wrong. Last story here. Let's go back to our It's Personal rankings. We revisited the Seahawks schedule to choose the game that is most personal to us. I don't want to hear, oh, I'd love to see them beat this team because this team has this roster, and it would say a lot. No, I want to hear things that don't make sense.
These are petty reasons.
Yes, I want to hear why your most petty self is going to be so happy when this team loses to the Seahawks. So your It's Personal rankings, we've now narrowed it down to one per, okay, Brady, uh-huh. Jake? All right, your one team, It's Personal rankings on the Seahawks schedule. When the Seahawks take on this team, you're like, you better get a win.
Number one for me would be the New York Jets. Why? Because, yes, they gave me an opportunity to continue my NFL career as a tryout rookie and was able to sign with the 90-man roster and all that and have that experience. But they ended up cutting me. So
Jets.
Despite that, that's why I'm coming for the New York Jets.
And they haven't been to a Super Bowl since beat them. That. Coincidence?
I think not. So, I mean,
they call it the Jay Keeps curse out in
that's right. It's infamous.
New York.
It's infamous out there. I mean, the one that got away is, as they say.
Yeah, you're their great white buffalo. Brady, Jake's personal game, It's Personal, is going to be against the Jets. What's yours?
Mine is going to be against the Raiders, even though they're in Las Vegas. My mom, she's from Oakland. Raiders fan first, Seahawks fan second, even though it's a little twisted up now that she's living up here and everything. But every time they play the Raiders, which unfortunately isn't every year,
yeah.
Oh, I want to see them lose to us.
Every time.
All right, Stacey, what do you got?
I went what it's personal. I could go with Denver, given Russell Wilson's history, obviously, here in Seattle, the recency of that trade. But no, I went with the Rams. I know you got two against the Rams. I know that seems like an easy answer. I don't hate the Rams because I hate Aaron Donald. I think he's one of the very best players I've ever seen. I don't hate the Rams because Bobby Wagner went there. I think he's such a fun player, such a nice guy. I enjoyed my time covering him. Was always a consummate professional. I don't hate the Rams because of Sean McVay and his stupid little mohawk, although I'd be lying if I said that wasn't part of it. I hate the Rams because I hate LA. People from LA like to tell you they're from LA. People from LA are so I hate LA. I do not enjoy it as a city. There's so much awesome culture, awesome teams, awesome people to come from it. So yeah. I have a love-hate relationship, I should say. It's a love-hate relationship because there's so much it has to offer. I have good friends from
LA. Does it?
But there's something about it that just...
How about
I want you to lose? Sean McVay is part of that. I'm not gonna lie. Sean McVay is part of it.
So you do not like Sean McVay?
I'm sure he's fine.
Okay.
But no,
as a coach. Okay. How about this for pettiness? Okay. This isn't even petty. This is just weird. Okay. But I like it. I vote the Atlanta Falcons. This is from the 425. I vote for the Atlanta Falcons because they have a Chick-fil-A in their stadium, yet is always closed on Sundays.
Thank you.
Really dumb decision.
Yes, it is a dumb decision.
That is really funny. But Chick-fil-A is open at any other sporting event that goes on
Thursday night football. Really exciting. It's great news for you guys.
Thursday night football or Monday night football, they must rake in the dough for it to be worth it.
You know what? I didn't have one for this, but I just know there's someone listening who's like, yeah, I hate the Chargers because my ex who cheated on me is a huge Chargers fan. Like somewhere there is someone that's like, you wronged me. And now every single time I see this game be played, I root against your team so hard. And I take joy. Truly, I take joy in your team losing.
That's why petty rankings are better than amazing. Actual rankings, right? Like,
all right. This or that coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
It's this or that brought to you by Allred Heating and Cooling. So let's look at some this or that suggestions. If you guys want to send any more in, you can to the Mac and Jack's text line 206-421-3776. As you start listening, you'll realize how to play the game. So this or that, Pop-Tart or Toaster Strudel? Some of them I keep pretty simple.
Pop-Tart or Toaster Strudel?
The answer's obvious.
I know you say probably Pop-Tart.
I most definitely say Pop-Tart.
A really good toaster strudel. I mean, yeah, that's
it's
pretty
too
good.
Hot. It burns
it's
your
really
fingers.
Good.
You have
what
to,
are you talking about? You can
you
say that about
so
a Pop-Tart.
Work in. You have to put the frosting on. There's not enough frosting. I mean, toaster strudels are delicious. Don't get me wrong. But there's something about Pop-Tarts that feels like you're eating a cookie.
Okay. I mean, a toaster shooto is a little bit more.
The pause in the music was
filling.
Perfect for Jake's horrified face.
I'm going to say toaster shooto on this because right. I think a grade A toaster shooto is better than the best Pop-Tart.
Okay.
That's how I feel about it.
All right. This or that? Nike or Adidas?
Nike.
Yeah.
Next.
Nike. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fine. Lunchable edition. You can have the pizza Lunchables or classic meat and cheese.
Ooh. Now this is tough right here.
Is it? Or is the answer clearly pizza, Brady? The answer is pizza.
The pizza is really good. However, it is stressful.
Good.
It is really stressful to like make sure that you have enough for each pizza.
No, that's not how you do it.
Yeah, it is.
That's not.
It is how you do it.
No, you. What you do is you recognize the sacrifice in limiting the toppings for the first one, maybe the second, and the third one is the perfect pizza.
Ugh.
You load
no.
it up.
No, you got to spread it evenly. You just got one bad one. What's the point of
that? Well, you could have three pizzas you kind of like or one pizza you absolutely love. Mm. It's the best pizza you've had.
You know, actually, the best combination of Lunchable is, you remember the pizza kind where they would do the pizza and then they would have the dessert pizza? So therefore, you do not have to worry about that at all. You don't have to worry about the amount that you give to the pizza because it's already there. And then you have the dessert kind where it's like chocolate layer with sprinkles on top or whatever else it was. That to me was the best combination. Best combination by
this
far.
This or that. Angels in the outfield or rookie of the year.
Ooh.
Brady's face is just, he can't even choose. He doesn't even know what to
this
do.
This is really hard, but I'm going to say Angels in the outfield. It is way more of an inspirational story, and it just gets you in the feels. Rookie of the Year is a fun story and a fun movie, but it doesn't hit quite
just
as
not
the
as
same
realistic.
As...
Yeah, I agree.
That's not
Brady,
what I was going to go
you?
With it, but... But
go.
Sure, yeah.
That was my friend's criticism of Game of Thrones.
Are you serious?
She was like, wow. It's just not that realistic. I was like, oh, a fantasy series where there are actual dragons is not realistic to you?
I can't stand people like that. I'm sorry, but it is
don't
the
watch
movies.
That genre.
It's a TV show. Of course it's not going to be realistic.
I just thought it would be based on a true story. Brady, what's yours?
Gosh.
Rookie of the Year or Angels in the Outfield?
Growing up as a kid, Angels in the Outfield's got to take it.
Of course. Angels I also grew up a kid. This or that. Brady's going to hate me. This or that. How about Pepsi or Coke?
Coke.
What psycho says Pepsi?
I don't know.
Literally
I have yet...
Someone who just loves sugar too much, which is not me. Yeah. I'm Coke side.
Easily. Okay.
I don't know anybody that has picked Pepsi.
Truly, I've never seen anyone in my entire life drink a Pepsi unless it was Cindy Crawford in a commercial.
Right. If we're talking about Pepsi products and Coke products, the only reason why I would ever decide a Pepsi product is because of Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's definitely Coke. For sure.
I appreciate Pepsi for continuing to try. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like perseverance, like the perseverance posters. That's like the kitten like hanging off and it's like, hang in there.
Yeah.
It's Pepsi. This or that, Mavs or Warriors?
Mavs or Warriors? Ooh, this is tough because the Warriors have not run away with their series at all. You know, their first one they won pretty easily. The second one was tougher on them. But until they lose, they just got all the experience. I think I'm going to pick the Warriors and feel pretty comfortable about it.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think I'm going the same. I think that it's going to be a fun series. I actually think that the remaining teams can be evenly matched, some more than others. It's just that they aren't exceptionally likable teams because they're winning franchises. You know what I mean? Like the Celtics.
Yeah.
It's not a team that's like fun to root for, but they're also a pretty good team. So it's
I
think we're going to get a good product. Just there isn't like a hero team remaining.
Yeah, I got you. I'm with you on that. Unless you're a big Jimmy Butler fan. Like there are
for sure.
Jimmy
Who
Butler
among us isn't.
Jimmy Butler has a cult following, and I'm sure there's a lot
of
people that would love to see Jimmy Butler in the NBA Finals.
Let's see. Oh, someone said, but now as a grown up, what's your favorite baseball movie? Because you have a lot of different choices now. You've got Moneyball, probably. That's a great movie.
Moneyball was a great movie.
For realistic Knicks, yes. But Bull Durham.
Really? I mean, solid. Major League for me, I genuinely love all the major leagues. Oh. They are hilarious.
Back to the minors.
Awesome. Yeah. Like, yeah, back to the minors. Even that one was
great.
Was hilarious. I loved all the major leagues, but honestly, this one gets mixed reviews. But the one that I really liked, and I'm trying
Trouble
to find
with the curve.
I'm trying to, for the love of the game.
Oh, okay.
For the love of the game, Kevin Costner, I really, really like that movie, and I know people have mixed reviews on it, but I really, really like that movie.
From Rod in the 916, this or that, Stacy or Jake? I choose Jake. Well, Rod, I choose to block you. Congrats.
Total wrong move there. Total wrong move. I don't block
I'm
anybody.
I'm driving this right
I
now.
I don't block anybody, nor do I have the authority to do so. Stacy does, and you picked the wrong person, my friend. Rod,
it
was nice. It was nice to see you on the text line. Thank you for your contributions. We'll never see you again.
Rod,
bye,
I
buddy.
Hope you enjoyed it. I mean, I really, thank you so much, but unfortunately, you have to go. All right, that'll do it, not just for this or that, but for Jake and Stacy today. You guys are going to get a good hour here of Wyman and Bob. 2 hours? 3 games? No, it's 2 p.m. A good hour here of Wyman and Bob. Then you'll go into the Mariners pregame show, and then they'll begin that series against the Toronto Blue Jays. First pitch at 4:07.
Let's go, Mariners.
Lots of baseball coming your way. Don't go anywhere.